There are more than 1,000 Unitarian Universalist congregations across the United States, and today, in many of them, we are celebrating the Flower Communion. Well, we are all celebrating with flowers. There's a debate over the name of what we are doing. Some of our theologians and historians insist that we must not call it a communion, and that we ought to call it by what its founder, Norbert Chopek, called it, and Chopek called it the Flower Festival. Do we call it Flower Communion or Flower Festival? Well, I have trouble with either name. The popular image evoked by the word communion is wine and bread, not something that works for all of us. But festival, that carries a connotation that doesn't seem to quite fit the intent. There's another more significant debate about words still swirling about the Unitarian Universalist Association. A past president of our National Association of Congregations, Mr. Bill Sinkford, started something of a firestorm of controversy several years ago when he gave a sermon in Colorado, The Language of Faith. And in that sermon he said, "We have in our principles an affirmation of our faith which uses not one single piece of religious language." He gave the sermon again in Texas, and a newspaper there picked up the story, but the reporter misunderstood the sermon, and he wrote that Bill Sinkford, then president of the Unitarian Universalist Association, was saying, in truth, that the principles of the association should have more God in them. Naturally, many UUs were a little upset. While some UUs are theists, others are non-theists and can't believe in any God, gods, or other deities. But what Bill Sinkford did not say was that any Unitarian or Universalist ought to believe in anything. In fact, immediately after he asked us to use some religious language in the principles of the Unitarian Universalist Association, he quoted a humanist religious scholar, the Reverend David Bumbaugh. And David Bumbaugh writes, "We have manned the ramparts of reason and are prepared to defend the citadel of the mind. But in the process, we have lost the ability to speak of that which is sacred, holy, of ultimate importance to us, the language which would allow us to enter into critical dialogue with the larger religious community. You can count on me to keep fighting at the ramparts of reason, and I am certain that you may expect the same from all succeeding presidents of the UUA. Too many people, I feel, have misunderstood this conversation. This is not another boring and pointless debate about what anyone is supposed to believe. The believe-disbelief debate sabotages our spirituality and causes pointless hurts among all of us. As Ralph Waldo Emerson pointed out, people bear beliefs as apple trees bear apples. Unitarian Universalists ought to be aware of the truth that no two people can possibly have exactly the same beliefs. The reality of life is that it is wild and diverse. And like the world around us, we Unitarian Universalists thrive on diversity, even when our surprising differences make us occasionally uncomfortable. But this exasperating and pointless debate became news again more recently. The New York Times picked up this debate and quoted Rada Miller of Concord, Massachusetts. And she is a member of the Unitarian Universalist Church there, and she calls herself a rational atheist. And she said that Bill Sinkford's proposal makes me feel that atheists are now less welcome in Unitarian Universalists. Several years ago, in the early days of our Gettysburg congregation organization, I got to know a young couple who had become Unitarian Universalists. Neither of them had grown up with any religious background, and they together had subsequently spent months researching religions and were filled with joy when they discovered Unitarian Universalism. They were proud to call themselves humanist UUs, but within the next few months, this young couple heard strong anti-Christian and anti-God comments in the congregation, and they were devastated. They left our congregation deeply disappointed, but still identifying as small UUs. They were of the five original organizing members of the UU congregation in Gettysburg. When the Reverend Norbert Chopek first celebrated the Flower Communion, or the Flower Festival, in Prague, Czechoslovakia in 1923, he was looking to create a ritual that would not be painful to the people of his Unitarian church. He had just started the church, and all the new members had come from many different religious backgrounds. They were at first very uncomfortable with any kind of liturgy. And after a few years of building trust with his congregation, Chopek created the Flower Festival. And he explained in his sermon that the flowers symbolize the members, each unique and free, yet gathered together, accepting each other regardless of their differences. And his people loved it. Flowers do more than make seeds. Flowers are an expression of desire that calls to humans and to bees and to butterflies and to birds. As the scientist Michael Pollan writes in his book, The Botany of Desire, plants with flowers and fruits have shaped our evolution as much as we humans have shaped theirs. Don't you love it? A botanist with the last name of Pollan. Pollan explains that from an evolutionary perspective, the plants and animals we use are also using us. In the case of a rose or an apple tree, they use us to create more and more rose bushes and more apple trees. Michael Pollan isn't saying that a rose bush thinks, hey, look at that sexy hunk of a rose bush across the street. I'm going to get the next bumblebee that comes along to take him some pollen. Truth is, most humans aren't thinking when they have those feelings either. Pollen is saying that flowers evolved to attract other species, and that in the millions of years since the first flowers appeared, plants and animals have been using each other, co-evolving, as it were. So, for example, apple trees evolved to give us humans a sweet fruit, and in return we have carried the seeds of apples from their original home in Kazakhstan to everywhere on the planet. Michael Pollan explains that 200 million years ago there were no flowers. Plants either cloned themselves or just cast their pollen on the wind or sea in the small chance that pollen would find its way to another plant of the same species somewhere. The world before flowers was almost all green and much less diverse. The life and the evolution moved very slowly. Life was, in Pollan's words, more local and inbred. Flowers changed everything. Flowering plants spread with stunning rapidity, giving animals nutrition in exchange for reproductive locomotion. And the world became more interdependent, more wild, and more diverse. Evolution became more than desire between creatures of the same species. Evolution evolved, and plants and animals began to attract one another. With flowers came fruit and seeds, and these remade life on earth. Without flowers, the reptiles, which got along just fine in a leafy, green, fruitless world, would probably still rule. Without flowers, we humans would not be. Pollan points out that a monocultural garden, that is, a garden stripped of its wild spirit, made with only one kind of plant, is a garden that won't last long. It is a simple fact that a vast field of identical plants will always be exquisitely vulnerable to insects, weeds, and disease. That is, vulnerable to extinction. David Bombaugh writes that humanism sees the universe continually incarnating itself in microbes and maples, in hummingbirds and human beings, constantly inviting us to tease out the revelation contained in stars, in atoms, and in every living thing. I would take this spirituality a step further. The universe invites us to become co-creators. Humanism accepts the universe's invitation by desire to create a beautiful, more diverse future, to imagine a planet filled with a wild web of life. The following is a quote from the York Beacon, the newsletter of the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of York, Pennsylvania. It was written a couple of years ago by the Reverend Robert F. Rangelian, who's the minister, and he and I have enjoyed a very close association, and over the years we have exchanged pulpits on many occasions. And Bob writes in the weekly newsletter, "We have the advantage of being a religion that respects the wisdom of the world's religions, and we don't claim that only one path is the right way in religion. Now and then this year I have quoted passages from Taoist, Islamic, Jewish, Christian, humanist, pagan, and Buddhist sources. But I notice that there is one religious source which gets a negative reaction around here," speaking of only the York congregation. Sometimes UUCY shines when it comes to lifting up the wisdom of the world's religions, including an inclusive take on Christianity. And sometimes it seems that Christianity can't be included. I've reflected on that, Bob writes. The best of what I dream about when I think of UUCY or any UU congregation is where folks bring something of value to share and are open to sampling what others bring. It makes me think of a great big religious potluck. Instead of covered dishes to eat, we nourish each other with the best of what we've found spiritually. Well, that is what is being asked of us today, to nurture the connection of us all. Unitarian Universalists are humanists and pagans and Christians and Buddhists and Jews and Transcendentalists, a people like a garden wild with diversity. We are not to succeed by being a local, inbred, monoculture spiritually. The world has too much of that already. To thrive, we need a language of love and desire that will nurture the wildness of our spiritual connections and evolve as a living tradition that is in harmony with nature and our nature. And for today, well, do we call it Flower Communion or Flower Festival? I'm not sure that we have an answer for that, but I trust that one will evolve over time. I'm not going to call it one way or the other. I'm going to love the exchange of ideas and the creativity that it will take to see which name survives from our co-evolution of spiritual thinking. At the conclusion of our service this morning, please each one of us come forward and select your choice of a flower, not the one that you brought this morning, and take it home with you in the spirit in which we celebrate it all today. And so may it be. Amen.